Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today is no exception. We have a great guest all the way from Denver, Colorado. Welcome to the show, Brennan Degner.
Thanks for having me, Victor.
Great to have you here. Now, Brennan, you run a vertically integrated company and you've been at this game for quite some time. We've got a lot to talk about today, but maybe before we do, maybe give a little bit of your backstory and how you got to this point in your journey.
Yeah, so we own about 3,000 units at this point. We're spread Texas, Colorado, Utah, and Nevada. It really started with an 8-unit deal that my partner and I did while I was running asset management for another firm. That led to a 10-unit deal and a 15-unit deal, and then the snowball happened. And once I left my role at MJW, it really just started to take off. So we started raising outside capital and really started to build the machine. And so that all happened between kind of 2016 and 2018. I officially left MJW late 2017. And so most of the 3,000 units, all but about 60 of the 3,000 units we own today, were purchased between 2018 and 2022. We haven't done any transactions yet this year.
Certainly the landscape has changed over the last 5 years and over the last 12 months in particular. A lot of the deals that would have been done over the last, well, certainly during the pandemic, would have been done with bridge debt. And if you could refinance out into permanent financing at a good number, it's something that starts with a 3, maybe a 4, you're still in good shape. Today, that's very different. And are you still able to get deals done? Does it make any sense with the valuations you're seeing out there?
Yeah, I mean, it's been tough. I would say we're generally still on the small amount of pipeline data that we have right now. We're still probably 10 on the low side and 20 to 30 on the high side percent off of where brokers are giving guidance, and some deals are even moving forward at. And there's not a lot of data points to look at right now, because if you don't have to sell, and I don't think a lot of us have to sell just yet, there's really no point to. So we've found value in kind of looking at deals across the portfolio. Obviously, late 21, early 22, the market really peaked. So for a lot of the stuff that we bought early in 21, we're still considerably outperforming underwriting on. And so a lot of what we've been doing right now to stay busy on the transaction side is actually looking at recapitalizing some of our own assets that have, kind of outperformed what we originally anticipated, but the value's kind of settled back down. And we still feel like we have the opportunity to kind of re-enter the deal with a new capital stack at a better basis than what we could have on a new acquisition, in the last year or so. So we've seen a lot of that, but it's been challenging. I think there was this, a lot of your listeners would have seen the same, this evolution of financing throughout 22, where, you started the year guns blazing, you got to the middle of the year, and I think a lot of people started to migrate towards bank debt. And then the rug kind of got pulled out from underneath us on bank debt. And then all of a sudden, agency was the only game in town towards the end of the year. And that's kind of what we're seeing today, is that to get a deal done right now with any level of certainty, it's got to underwrite well from an agency perspective. So the heavy value add stuff for us has been really challenging to make sense of.
That mirrors what we're seeing in the marketplace as well. And if you look at folks that underwrote deals with bridge debt in 21 and 22, well, their original pro forma would have anticipated a refinance into permanent financing, and that number probably would have started with a 3 on their analysis, and today would start with a 6. They're in a bad spot. They were planning on a cash out refinance, when in fact now they're going to have to write a big fat check just to get into permanent financing. Yep. So we're anticipating seeing a fair bit of distress coming into the marketplace once those bridge loans get exhausted and they run out of extensions. We're expecting to see some haircuts, and we're expecting to see some distress coming into the market.
Absolutely. And I think our thesis mirrors that. We're in the process of raising our first fund, and the thesis on the fund is basically to capitalize on, that market pullback that we see, or so the value pullback, because like I said at the beginning, I don't think a lot of us have to sell yet, But that writing is on the wall in the next 12 to 24 months, like you're saying. So a lot of what we're seeing right now across our own portfolio is really asset managing around what you're talking about. We did a decent amount of bridge debt into late 21. Most of what we bought in 22 was bank financing. We kind of saw when things in our markets were trading at 2.5 cap, our position was we need to start to de-risk the leverage on the portfolio a little bit. But yeah, I think ourselves included, we're going to have some tough conversations on some of the higher leverage bridge as we get into late 23. I think 24 is really where we see the floodgates starting to open up a little bit as people get towards that third year. Generally, the bridge debt was either a 2+1 structure where your first extension is free, but more commonly a 3+1+1 structure. And so mathematically, if you bought a deal in 21, 24 is really when we're going to start to see some more guns to people's heads about what to do from a capital event perspective. And yeah, it's crazy. I mean, some of our deals that were 20+% ahead of underwritten rates are. So like a lot of the conversation around this has been, oh, but rates are so much higher than we expected to be. So the ability to do a cash neutral refi is going to be, you're going to be okay. That's just not what we're seeing from an underwriting perspective yet. You know, deals that were drastically outperforming underwriting on, you could still be doing a 50% cash in refi in some scenarios.
Yeah. We're seeing the same thing in the marketplace as well. And so I think it's going to be an interesting time, certainly the next 12 to 24 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we share that opinion. So we're definitely gearing up to take advantage of that.
So are you, apart from the gap price discovery between buyer and seller today, that gap being somewhere between 10 and 30%, are you seeing any deals that make any sense to you in the current market conditions?
You know, it's tough. Not really. We saw kind of a spike in pipeline right after NMHC. I don't know if you attended NMHC, but it was interesting. Like there was just this like wave of confidence and excitement at the conference. That was the day they announced the first, I think like the third day of the conference was the day they announced the first 25 basis point increase in the Fed funds rate. And there was just this like, we're back type of moment. And I think it was that Friday that I want to say it was the significantly under forecasted jobs or over forecasted, over extended jobs report came out and like just took the wind out of everyone's sails. And so since that point, you know, we saw a lot of stuff come to market in around that time, right after NMHC. Some of it's trading now. Some of it, people just ended up not getting the pricing they wanted and pulled back. And now we're kind of back to a point where it's pretty stale. So we're not seeing a lot that we can pencil right now. Like I said, we've got a couple of recaps that we're looking at, one that we're about to select a new joint venture partner on in the next week or so, one coming up in Austin, but potentially in Austin. And outside of that, we're just not really seeing much.
Yeah, I'm seeing the same thing as well. Now, the other thing we've seen is that some of the agencies and HUD in particular have become much more particular around certain risk factors. So for example, sure. If there is a natural gas pipeline within, and I might misquote the distance, I'll say 600 feet of the property, now all of a sudden they will not even look at that property.
Sure.
Things like that. How much of that is a factor in what you're seeing as well?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see how far the pendulum swings each way, because I would argue to the extent they like a deal, I've really seen them in the last few months lean in considerably to try and win it. And I think some of that, you know, anecdotally was because they just didn't put out enough capital in the last quarter. So yeah, we've seen where if an agency really likes a deal, Fannie or Freddie, they'll really get significantly more competitive. I know they're pulling levers of increasing the amortization schedule to try and offset some of the additional interest rate in your sizing metrics. And so offering more IO than a lot of times we've seen historically. But yeah, to your point, to the opposite side, when the pendulum swings the other way, you essentially have a deal that's not financeable at that point, because the agencies are really the only game in town, and they'll kind of price themselves to a point that doesn't make sense to do the deal when they don't like a property. So it's like they're either all in or all out.
Yeah, exactly. So what's your strategy? You said you're raising a fund, and how do you forecast when you talk to investors? You're putting forward a projection, and we're really in uncharted waters at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. For the first time in a while, you have so much uncertainty over so many different variables in your underwriting. One of the things we haven't really talked about a lot yet is we are seeing a pretty significant softening in rents relatively quickly. A lot of it's supply driven. You know, we were just looking at data this morning in Salt Lake City for one of our assets, and between what's delivered over the last two quarters and then the next three, the downtown submarket is delivering like a 20% increase in their housing stock. And so it's, I think it was something like 8,000 units in like a 3 mile radius of Salt Lake City. And so anything we own there is really seeing a softening. We've seen kind of similar stuff happening in Austin with very high number of deliveries all at one time. So, you know, you have this kind of perfect storm of interest rate volatility, and how do you, with a pending recession, how do you underwrite future rent growth and current rents if they're softening day by day, or you have more concessions? So it's like we went from an environment over the last couple of years where it was like, what levers are you getting too aggressive on, to now it's like kind of we're struggling to figure out where are we missing so far on these deals, because it feels like every lever you pull on an underwriting, there's kind of a wrap of pessimism around right now.
Yeah, we're seeing exactly the same thing as well. Well, Brennan, if folks want to connect, if they want to learn more, what's the best way?
Shoot me an email, bd@dbcap.com. You can find it on our website as well. Happy to, you know, jump on a quick call, have a quick conversation, and see if there's any opportunity to learn together, do business together. More than happy to make some time.
Brennan, love the perspective. Best of luck over this next little turbulent period here. And for the listeners at home, definitely connect with Brennan at dbcap.com. That is DB Capital Management. The link for the website will be in the show notes. And in the meantime, have an awesome rest of your weekend. Go make some great things happen. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow.